right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. That's right, I'm still here. There's a big red light flashing in front of me. I don't know what it means, and it's scaring me. Anyway, we have a packed show, and actually that's it's very interesting that in these kinds of days, this is exactly what we're going to need. And at the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with Lenny Wolf and Lucha Bright. And they're going to be talking from the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. And they're going to be talking about the coronavirus, a natural disaster in the system of savaging inequalities, capitalism, imperialism. What the hell is going on with all this? The rise of fascism, and what's it going to mean for, you know, for all of us who are living here now? And these are some pretty heavy times, and we got to pay close attention to what's going on and figuring out what we need to do, what's going to make a difference. And along those lines, I'm also very, very pleased to be welcoming to the show Eunice Cho, who's Eunice is a ACLU. She's from the ACLU, and she's the ACLU Prison Project. And we're going to be talking with her about there was recently a lawsuit filed. She recently filed a lawsuit against ICE in the Tacoma area, and we're going to talk about that with her. You know, a statement of the ACLU website began with, "Our immigration detention system locks up hundreds of thousands of immigrants unnecessarily every year, exposing detainees to brutal and inhumane conditions of confinement." Well, first off, Eunice, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure. It took me a little longer to get around this time because I'm sitting here worried about, okay, what do I touch or what do I not touch? You know, it's like, it's a rough time for any of this going on. And I think it's really important that people like you are actually standing fast and doing what you need, doing what needs to be done. Now, let's jump into this right away because I want to have as long a conversation as I can with you. That statement on the ACLU website begins, "Our immigration detention system locks up hundreds of thousands of immigrants unnecessarily every year, exposing detainees to brutal and inhumane conditions of confinement." Can you help us break that down? Because it's kind of like, you know, you can read that and it can be one of those things that just kind of flows past you. Can you help us break that down? What actually is being talked about here?
Sure. Well, you know, the immigration detention system locks up, as we said, hundreds of thousands of people in detention a year. And what many people don't know is that there are immigration detention centers all around the country. There's detention centers and jails in every state that hold people in custody for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. And what we know about these facilities is that in normal times, medical care, mental health care in these facilities are already terrible. There have been a record rate of deaths in custody this year alone under the Trump administration. And we have heard reports from detainees themselves about just the difficulties in getting adequate medical care, sanitation supplies like soap, you know, even before this COVID outbreak took place. Now that COVID is a huge part of our lives, our concern for people who are in custody is even greater. As many people have noted, including public health detention experts and law enforcement officials themselves have said, that the conditions in jails and prisons and immigration detention centers basically provide a disaster in the making with respect to COVID-19. These are closed environments where people are sharing space very closely. They share bathrooms, eating together, sleeping together in the same room. And in a situation with COVID-19 where there is no vaccine, there's no known cure, there's no treatment for COVID, and the only available public health strategy is to do what we're all doing, social distancing and good hygiene, those are absolutely not available in immigration detention centers. And we worry about what will happen, and this is not an if, but this is really a when COVID arrives in one of these facilities.
Well, you know, it's very heavy to me, actually, because particularly when you're putting it in the context that you're putting it on in, and which is one that you can't avoid and don't want to avoid today, it's very, very heavy, you know, and you're breaking this down very well. But, you know, again, how many people, just so people can get a taste of this, who are these people? How many people are locked up, and why is it not necessary?
Well, the immigration detention system in the United States, on average, locks up about 40,000 people per day. This number has gone up and down. But, you know, at certain points in the Trump administration, this number has reached as high as 56,000 people per day in custody. these the people who are being detained, they're all being held civil immigration charges. So while they're awaiting adjudication of their immigration cases, and you know, they are either folks who have entered the United States and asked for asylum. They are people who are from our communities who have been caught up, you know, in police activity with respect to traffic stops, those types of things. They're people who are in our communities as well. So these are who are locked up. They're moms, dads, family members who are in these immigration detention centers. And like I said, they are located everywhere in the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, the argument that you make, too, is that this is not necessary, you know, and I think it's really important because a lot of people, you know, especially today, I mean, look, you're looking at a situation where you have a lot of people who are falling, and it's just remarkable to just listen to the radio and you hear all these, you know, the quotes and the things coming out, the ideas, the whacked out assertions by the Trump regime and all this stuff that's going on that is none of it's true, you know, and they're throwing people in prison around this, all this stuff, and the constant targeting of nationalities from other countries. You know, this is an incredibly important thing for people to understand. And, you know, you're arguing that it's not necessary to actually do this. And I think that's something that would be very, 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 you know, a lot of people would say, well, wait a minute, aren't they, you know, maybe it is necessary because who knows where these people are coming from. But tell us why it's not necessary. And then what are the conditions that people are living in there? I mean, you mentioned this huge number of people that were getting thrown into prison. I want to hear what are the conditions that they're living in? Because those two things, I think, go together, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you're absolutely right when you say that this is a system that doesn't need to exist. Indeed, in the 1970s, there was no immigration detention system. And in the early 1990s, there were only about 6,000 people per, you know, that were being held in immigration detention at any one time. This number has grown about tenfold since that point in time. And we really do need to ask ourselves, you know, if it wasn't necessary back then, why is it necessary now? And we know that the growth in immigration detention really tracked along with the growth in mass incarceration that took place after the mid-1990s. And in, over the last two decades, the growth in immigration detention, especially this is especially a system that is particularly high percentage number of beds is run by private prison companies, and who have basically profited off of these locking up immigrant detainees in civil confinement. So I do think it's very important for us to ask why this is indeed a system that exists in the first place when, you know, this is a relatively new phenomenon. In terms of the conditions of confinement in immigration detention, you know, we have conducted several studies and reports and documented abuses after talking with immigrant detainees, people who are locked in immigration detention centers. And the things that we hear repeatedly include concerns with the lack of adequate medical care, adequate mental health care in these facilities. We've also heard of the overuse of solitary confinement in immigration detention centers, people getting locked up in solitary confinement for very minor issues or just because guards are retaliating against people for speaking out in support of their rights. We have seen a number of complaints about the lack of basic sanitation, you know, not getting soap to clean oneself with, not being able to have your laundry washed, very basic things with respect to basic hygiene that are especially necessary in a time like this. You know, I think those are types of abuses we hear regularly. We've also heard about use of force in immigration detention facilities where, you know, people have complained about guards beating detainees. And I think one of the things about immigration detention is that it is so remote and so few people actually have a chance to go and visit and see what it's like, is that it becomes an environment where abuses can happen unchecked.
Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me, as I was, you know, reading up on it last night and reading some of the stuff that you said around it, you know, it's very heavy. I mean, it does remind me a lot of, and I know people say, oh, come on, you can't bring this up all the time. But actually, unfortunately, there's a lot of resemblance between it and what the Nazis did to Jewish people and, you know, other people, other oppressed people in Germany, and the kind of lock you up, you disappear. Maybe you'll live, maybe you won't, who cares, you know? And it's kind of, to me, there's that kind of thing that's getting just pulled out, and that ugly, ugly thing that's getting popularized in across the country. And I'm really concerned about this in the sense of people need to know about it, but they also need to know about it and say, no, this can't go on anymore. And we're talking to senior staff attorney at the ACLU's National Prison Project, and her name is Eunice Cho. So yeah, I got that out loud. I wanted to get it out very loud for you, Eunice. And she's actually been you filed a temporary restraining order against what's going on in the prisons now?
Yeah, so we have filed a lawsuit against ICE requesting the release of people who are medically vulnerable in the context of COVID. So as I said earlier, you know, we know that unfortunately at this point in time there is no vaccine. There's no treatment, there's no cure to COVID, and that has led to extraordinary public health measures, basically requiring public social distancing where we are all trying to remain separated enough that we're not communicating this disease, transmitting this disease. The problem is, again, in immigration detention centers and prisons and jails, these are environments where that just is not possible. And we just only have to think about really, recent examples of these closed group environments like nursing homes or cruise ships where the largest outbreaks of COVID-19 have taken place. And in those settings, people had the benefit of having more autonomy to have social distancing and more accessibility to basic hygiene supplies like soap and water. This is not actually what can take place in an immigration detention center in the way that they are set up. Immigration detention centers and prisons and jails are, people have very little autonomy. It is very difficult, especially in crowded situations, to be able to get the recommended 6 feet distance between person to person. And we have heard multiple reports from many, many facilities that basic hygiene supplies like soap and water, sanitizer, those things are just not available for folks. And that all basically creates a disaster in the making. We know that there has been some transmission and have heard reports of COVID in immigration detention centers. There was a report only yesterday that a medical staff in New Jersey ICE detention center tested positive for COVID. And it is only a matter of time. Again, as I said, it is not an if, but a when COVID enters these immigration detention facilities. And for people who are medically vulnerable to infection by COVID, it will not only mean serious illness or the risk of death for those individuals, but also can lead to an overwhelming impact on our local healthcare systems. If you have a congregate group environment where everybody gets sick at the same time, it could have a devastating impact in terms of the availability of resources for people in our healthcare system as it currently exists.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this, because the courts responded to your suit and they denied it, basically, right?
Well, they denied our motion for a temporary restraining order. The case continues. Mm-hmm. We still have the availability to request the court to allow for a release. It was an extremely limited provision in that the court emphasized that if any facts change, I think the court acknowledged the rapidly changing and the serious nature of the COVID-19 crisis, and that if things did change, the court is very open to reconsidering its decision with additional information. Litigation will allow us to get more information from ICE about what is actually happening in the facilities, their testing capabilities and their treatment protocols within the facilities as well.
Tell me this, this lawsuit is about the Tacoma, Washington camp, but it's true everywhere, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And so what's the scope of this? Help people understand what the scope of this is.
Well, again, we focused our lawsuit in Tacoma, Washington, because that at that point was the largest outbreak of COVID-19 in the United States. Since then, of course, in just a matter of days, there have been an exponential growth of the number of COVID patients around the country. For this reason, there are a number of lawsuits that are like our lawsuit that we had first filed in Seattle, currently in the works as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this, because one thing that bothers me is that, this thing about it being normalized, and it really is, it's sort of like so much can happen. I mean, it's, I was reading books on Nazi Germany figuring that it's there's a lot we can learn from there in terms of what the hell was going on there and what's happening, what's beginning to happen here and happening here, you know. And they said that Jews were carriers of disease, and that justified what they were doing. And I was thinking about this, just how this whole thing, you know, think this, what you're telling us is something that should be really just bothering people 24 hours a day, that this kind of thing is going on and it's normalized. Let's talk about that a little.
I think history will not look at us kindly if we allow this sort of rights violation to continue. In terms of our clients, I worry about them, that, you know, the court will be too late to save somebody if they once do come down with COVID-19. And I think that is the tragedy that we are trying to prevent from happening at this point. I think everyone can understand the fear that comes and the anxiety that comes with what is happening in our society today with respect to COVID-19. And when we look back at these types of tragedies and these types of moments that shape our society, we will be judged for how we, what we are doing to protect everybody in our society, including the most vulnerable. We will also be judged as to how tolerant we are and whether or not we are depending on the true science of what we know about the disease, rather than, you know, reverting to language that is based on hate, that is based on stigma, and that is based on fear.
Mm-hmm. You know, even as you're talking, I keep thinking about all these people that I know who are, you know, generally, I would say, you know, they're good friends, they're, you know, they're progressive, they're whatever, you know. And I think that, you know, this idea that this can happen and people aren't just in the streets outraged around this, you know, that these prisons supposedly are now being turned into death camps, and the courts are okay with it, but so are many of the people who should be actually crying out, beating drums, running down the streets, screaming and yelling and saying, no, not in our name, we're not going to let this happen, not at all, not ever, but it's not happening.
Well, I think the recommendation right now is, if you are going to congregate in a public space, you should probably stay 6 feet away from the next person. But that fact notwithstanding, I think that there are still ways to express our outrage with respect to what is happening. We really encourage people to contact their local members of Congress to express their concern for what is happening in immigration detention and prisons and jails with respect to COVID-19, as this is a disaster in the making. And, you know, we have the benefit right now of technology and other ways to stay in touch with folks in this period. And, you know, we fully encourage people to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, I think it's important what you're saying. I just keep thinking again, you know, behind all the talk, or at least some of the talk, about pulling together as humans and whatever, the Trump regime is bound to use basically to use all this to escalate its ethnic cleansing process that it's got going on. And I don't hesitate to say ethnic cleansing, because that's really what I believe is actually what he's doing. And the LA Times just a couple of days ago had a story about ICE raids in the times of the virus, and with the enforcers of ethnic cleansing putting on surgical masks and giving each other elbow bumps before they went to ambush people on the way to work and disappear them. This is a very disturbing image.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, history will not look kindly on the tactics that ICE has employed to bring people into custody. I also saw that story and was heartbroken by it. There are stories of ICE agents going to people's doors and using ruses, basically lying, saying that they are police officers or doctors, to try to gain access into people's homes, and then presenting themselves as ICE officers ready to arrest and take people into custody. These are not tactics that that work. They're not tactics that we should tolerate, particularly in an environment where we need everybody's participation, cooperation, and help to defeating something as serious as COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Now, if people want to follow what you're doing, follow you, follow what's being done there, how can they get more information, or find out a way to actually take part in this in some way?
Yeah, so please follow our website at aclu.org. There's information about this topic and many other important civil rights issues that we are dealing with in this particular moment in time. And, you know, we appreciate everybody's support.
Mm-hmm. All right, Eunice, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Sure. Take care now. And hopefully I'll talk to you again, and stay in touch, because if this stuff gets hotter, I want to be out there making sure that it doesn't go down silently, you know?
Thank you.
Okay. Take care now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Eunice Cho from the Senior Staff Attorney at the ACLU's National Prison Project, and she's been working on this, she's been working on this major project to stop the torture of people locked up in prisons, okay, the immigrants locked up in prisons. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with our next segment, which it's going to knock your socks off, right? So stay tuned.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well.
All right, I was just gonna keep on running that because it's just, yeah. All that music, it's coming back. And it's really something that really moves me. Anyway, our next segment, I've been waiting to do this for a little while, and I'm really pleased to get into it. We're going to be talking with Lenny Wolf from the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. And we're going to be talking, joining him will also be Lucha Bright. And we're going to be talking about the coronavirus, a natural disaster in a system of savage inequalities, capitalism, imperialism. Lenny, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm all right. Do you have a frog in your throat?
I'm just no. I'm fine. I'm fine.
I just wanted to make sure I don't like frogs.
I'm okay. So far, so good.
Okay. All right. Now, Lucha, are you there too?
Yes, I'm here, Michael.
Okay. Hi. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
It's a heavy world today, and I'm glad you guys are out there in it. And doing what you're doing. So let's jump on this, you know, natural disaster in a system of savage inequalities, capitalism, imperialism. Let's talk about this. I guess what we'll do is, I don't know how you want to work this. I was thinking I would start with Lenny first, and then we can just go back and forth or whatever, you know, whatever is good, for, you know, in terms of what you would. Did you have
I
any?
I think that'll work.
Okay. All right. Why don't we do that then? Now, in American fascism, you know, there's people are very, very, you know, I think there's a lot of people who, you know, You know, people used to call things fascist that you could say, okay, they're just calling everything fascist. But today, it seems that not enough people are actually recognizing that there is, in fact, an American fascism here and advancing. What are we talking about here? Let's put some meat on this as we get into this. You want to jump on this first?
I think a lot of what you and your previous guest were getting into points to at least one of the really terrible examples of what's going on and what's being made worse. And I want to actually follow up on a few points you and your guest made. One was your point, which she was also underlining by saying history won't judge us kindly, on the Nazi character of what is being done to the immigrants in particular. And the point that you were making on the need to protest, the need to bring this out, even in situations like this, I noted that people in Brazil the other day, millions of them went out on their balconies and in their doorways to bang on pots and pans to protest Bolsonaro, who's also a fascist. and what he's been doing and not doing around this. And I think we're going to have to find the ways appropriate to the current situation to continue to raise the necessary questions and to wage the necessary battles. But I also want to follow up on something you said and kind of pull the lens back a little bit on the unnecessary character. It was actually Eunice was making this point that what's being done to the immigrants is totally unnecessary right now. And you were also underscoring that. Before we get totally to the fascism, I want to talk about what kind of a system of which this fascism is one expression, one form of rule of it, though, that we're dealing with right now. What kind of a system makes this necessary? Why is this perceived to be necessary? Why is this being acted on? And how are we going to get out of this? Is it really necessary? Is there an alternative? Could this be done in a different way? Any society, Mike, would have to deal with viruses. They would have to deal with pandemics, and all the rest, just as any society has to deal with hurricanes and other natural disasters. But how they deal with it has to do with what social system they have. What are the motive forces that drive that society? What are the basic relations underlying that society? And what kind of constraints, or alternatively, what kind of freedom does that give humanity and the people in that society to deal with these things? And I did want to talk about three things on the front page of the paper today of the New York Times that bring out how much unnecessary damage it does to deal with this through this system, and how a socialist system, and I mean a real socialist system, which requires a real revolution, a real dismantling of the forces of repression of the current system and its replacement top to bottom by totally different social relations, economic relations, political structures, a different morality between people, different relations between people, could deal with things like this so much better. And there were three articles. One was that they've done a simulation. The Trump regime had its people do a simulation of something remarkably similar to this over a year ago. And this simulation gave an actual sense of the level of damage that it would be done. Their simulation gave you 110 million Americans becoming infected by it, leading to 7.7 million hospitalized and 588,000 dead. They can't say they didn't know that something like this could happen, okay? The other article, I'll get back to all of these. The other articles are that there's a global race. The headline is a global race to figure out a silver bullet. And this article makes the point again that I'm going to quote this actually. I know I'm taking a minute, but
that's fine. Don't worry about it, man. Take as long as you want.
There's a nationalistic approach that could give the winner the chance to favor its own population and potentially gain the upper hand in dealing with the economic and geostrategic fallout from the crisis. Okay, they're not calling for all the scientists of the world to come together, to be communicating with each other, to make this any breakthrough the property of everybody else. They're trying to figure out how to angle for advantage with each other. And there was something that came out the other day about the Trump himself attempting to buy out a German company that seemed to be making advances on this, and then the Germans saying, no, you can't do this and all that. And then the final point is the final article, which is the main article on the front page, is that there's going to be terrible shortages of gear. It says, doctors sound alarm as a nation struggles. Shortages of gear imperil staffs at hospitals. And what this is basically saying is that the frontline caregivers in this are going to be, they're going to be up against, they won't have the necessary, it's not just the respirators for the patients. They don't even have face masks. They detail in this some of what people are doing very heroically, at the risk, and in many cases, almost a certain risk of their own lives, to deal with this. Why? Because there is no stockpile. There's no planning. There's no, these things are three interlocking things when you think about it, each of these, all driven by a system in which the commanding, in which the driving commandment is to expand profit. And this overrides everything, and in which the, and takes expression in competition on a global level between nation states, and in which the society also keeps people in abysmal ignorance, both of basic science and of things they understand that are looming. This is how unconscionable is it to make this simulation and say nothing, and keep people ignorant? You know, you, here's where you see the crying unnecessariness of all this, that it doesn't have to be this way. You can, I really want to urge people, go to the website revcom.us, read the Constitution that's been authored by Bob Avakian, who's brought forward a new communism, and see how a socialist society would deal with this so much differently, how it would prepare, how it involves the ordinary people, the masses of people in society, in grappling with what to do and collectively figuring out and preparing responses in advance, and how it would gear production to be able to meet calamities, and to do this not just for the people in this society ranged against the whole world, but to fight for the world as a whole, to do this for the world as a whole and as part of that world as a whole, and to struggle for cooperation and for a common way for humanity. There's 7.7 billion of us. It's a common humanity. And why is this not put in first place? And the only reason is because of this, because of the system we're living under, and we don't need this system. That's why, you know, anyway, I think this is why we say, or I say, and we on the tour say, there's never been a leader like Bob Avakian in a country like this before. Who else has brought forward a constitution that actually lays out and provides a way for people to understand in advance what kind of society we're going for, and how that society, which would rely on people's conscious understanding of science and of the scientific method, would be so, so different. It would give you so much more freedom. And then you do have, then, what your guest was saying, and which Luch is going to bring forward, the savage inequalities that pre-exist in this system, which come into play and then get accentuated when there is a question like this that arises in society. The things we saw on one scale in Katrina, we will very likely be seeing on a much larger scale in the days and weeks ahead. They're sentencing the immigrants that your guest talked about to death. Mm-hmm. A portion of these immigrants are being sentenced to death and disease. What kind of a system does that? And this is the question we have to be asking, not only what we have to do to fight this, we have to be, and yes, we do need to find the ways to fight against this particular ugly form this is taking in the Trumpian fascism, the combination of ugliness and, you know, idiocy. But we've got to really, 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 it's time to really look at where are we at as a species, and what do we need to be doing? And we've got to open our minds to the fact that there is an alternative, and that the hour is late, and this is bringing that out and underlining it. I just want to, I think I kind of went on for a while, but I wanted to have, I don't think anybody's sleeping much these days.
No.
There's a lot on everybody's mind, and I just wanted to kind of put some things out there. I do want to bring Lucha in.
I will bring Lucha in a minute, but I have one question I want to ask you, because it sort of fits in with what you've been saying. And, you know, there's one thing that's really been, I mean, it just eats away at me. It just makes me so angry when I see this. And this whole thing, you know, we rode through it with this Bernie thing and all this stuff that's going on about, well, yeah, that, you know, and I think this is something that we have to pay some attention to, not, you know, sort of like, oh, we've got to go out and do, but we actually do have to pay some attention to this. The fact that so many people, while so many people are having a hard time digging into what's actually really happening, or how do you actually solve it? A lot of people are also coming up. People who should know better are coming up and talking about, you know, basically, well, let's, you know, we got to get Bernie, we got to get Biden, we actually got to get in there. And in the long run, they have no problem when all this stuff is piling up and consolidating. They have no problem basically working with Trump, not against him.
Well, I think you have to draw some distinctions. I think there's people in the, I think you're right, there's a lot of collaboration with Trump. There's a soft peddling of criticism of some people. But I think right now, I really feel, I'm kind of not so much in a mood. You know, look, Bernie brings out some important points. Bernie doesn't have a program that can actually get you to the other side. Bernie doesn't, but it's not that there's nothing to what Bernie is saying, including some of his points on the virus. And certainly there's quite a bit to what a lot of Bernie's followers are saying and thinking. And there's, I think, ground right now to be working with people, to be talking with people, to be struggling where necessary, and to be bringing forward, of course, what we understand to be the real solution, to be the real important thing. But and certainly, yeah, I think, you know, I'm not going against your question, but I'm more, I feel we've got to be, look, I think that, how shall I put it? I think there's a real bankruptcy to the Democratic Party and to thinking that this is going to be fried. Anything else but more of the same. Mm-hmm. You know, look, everything your guest was saying was very important. But Obama was the deporter-in-chief. The system of mass incarceration was ushered in by both Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. There was a ruling class consensus to do that. Because why? Because of the needs of this system. And I think this is where we have to be going to right now. What is the real problem here? What is the real solution? And then working with people, dialoguing with people as needed, criticizing people as needed, but keeping our eyes focused on this crisis right now is a huge crisis, and we need to be really bringing forward the positive, both our critique of it and the positive alternative, the only alternative fundamentally that, that there is to this. And then, and then there is a need to, there's going to be a need to unite, I foresee, to unite people very, very broadly in this next period to go up against some of what's coming down. I think we would probably differ, or I would probably differ with some of what your guest was putting forward, some, but I can definitely, look, what she's doing is very, very important, and the main thrust of what she's bringing forward is very, very important. Mm-hmm. We need to be understanding that, and we need to be understanding that there's a need to actually to discuss and, where necessary, to debate and sometimes struggle over where this needs to go and what's actually fundamental here, what's driving this, and what's the solution.
Yeah, see, I'm really happy you said that, all that. I mean, that's what I was trying to get into in terms of, but I think this point, because look, there is a point where a lot of people settle back and think, okay, they're doing all that they have to do, but I think that's changing now. There's a lot of stuff that's going on that people are getting both terrified of and angry about. But there really needs to be some, you know, I think what you're saying is important. You don't just say you're not pure enough. There's actually, you have to talk with people, figure out what, you know, where do you find interest and where do you don't? And what can you, how can you, you know, how can you carry this stuff forward without sacrificing what's really truth, you know, and what really does need to be done? And how do you actually, you know, work with people around that stuff? So I think that's been very, 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 it's very good. And I think I really am glad you made the, basically the statement that you did. So that's cool. I want to also let people know that this is the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking right now to Lenny Wolf and Lucha Bright. And did you have more you wanted to add, Lenny, before I move on to Lucha for a bit?
No, I'll chime in. I do want to hear Lucha. Lucha's been talking with people. She's been doing a lot, and it's very vitally, vitally important what this tour is doing, this Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour that Lucha's on, that I'm on. And I really, you know, this is vitally needed. If you want to make an analogy, this is medicinal work. This this is vitally needed medicine in two dimensions. First, in that there's actually going to be a fight for medical care. There's an actual struggle. The way these savage inequalities come down, the things that happened in Katrina that let us know what, and in every natural disaster, that let us know what's coming down the pike and what's already expressing itself in very ugly terms, as your guest pointed out. And it's medicinal, you know, if I could use the analogy in the sense that people need the understanding most of all of what's driving this. And I guess in the third sense, some of what Luch is doing and some of what we're doing as a tour is bringing out to people the measures they do need to be taking right now to protect themselves and to protect others from this virus. And it's very important. People tell us, and this is something Luch told me and others, that you have a situation out there where people are rightly suspicious of everything they hear from the authorities, and they actually tell us, well, we can trust you guys, you know. So anyway, but bring around, you know.
I'm just about to. Just about to. Okay, Lucha, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Michael.
Sure. Well, let's jump into it. What are you learning?
Well, we've been out among mainly a lot of Spanish-speaking people, but also in South Central, you know, Spanish-speaking Black people in South Central, going out to people, including out in front of the welfare office, in different places. And we've been out with the communiques. The National Revolution Tour has issued some communiques about the coronavirus that bring out, you know, the danger of it, the reality of it, the science of it, what is this virus, and also the nature of the inequalities that people are dealing with that mean that because of the workings of a capitalist system, of a profit-driven system, of a competition-based system, that the needs that people have don't get met in the ways they need to. The health needs that people have, the fact that this country is built on white supremacy means that there's whole sections of people that are already in conditions that are, you know, that are terrible and that will be hit much harder by this disease and by the repression that is the only thing this system has to rely on. And we've been bringing out in that there, some of what Lenny's been talking about this is the workings of a system, and it is not what humanity has to have. It is not the way things have to be, that there's a revolution that we can make and need to make to get rid of this system. And there really is a whole different way that we could organize society to deal with things like this, like the coronavirus. And one of the things that has been really striking in talking to people, it's, you know, people very broadly among, like, there's a whole section of people that basically, like, have had no access to science. And I don't think that's just among oppressed people. I think this society overall doesn't, you know, this is, because it's a capitalist system, they don't mobilize people based on understanding. They don't, you know, people are not being taught how to have a scientific method to understand things. And especially, that's even more heightened now with a fascist regime in power where they attack science, they attack truth. Truth is whatever, you know, they say it is. And so very broadly what's happening, like we're talking to people and they're saying they really know very little, right, even about basic measures like why washing your hands for 20 seconds and keeping social distance, why things like that, why they matter, you know, even that people need to do those things, but also why they matter in terms of slowing the spread of the virus. And a lot of where people are going, because they have so much experience with and so much distrust of the government and of the authorities, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories. There's a lot of ways people know that they can't trust these people, you know, and so then they come up with a lot of different explanations of what, you know, whether there actually is a disease, if there is, where it's come from, you know, did it get created by somebody for political purposes? Is it just being used for the election? Is it being used to kill off all the people that this government and this system, you know, consider to be undesirable, the poor people, the immigrants? You know, there's a lot of fear, and and part of the fear is that people, there's both fear on the one hand, and there's on the other hand kind of like poo-pooing it, you know, like, oh, well, it's not really that serious. It's all kind of, you know, something that's all made up. Or there's nothing we can do about it anyway, and we can't really understand it. And so we just have to, like, you know, God will sort it out, you know, and a lot of kind of pulling to religion. So these are some of the things that we found when we've gone out among the people. But the other thing that's happened in that is, you know, especially in neighborhoods where the, you know, we are here with the tour to bring forward a movement and an organized core for an actual revolution that's taking up the new communism that Babavakian has developed. And that there has been some, in some places, some presence of the revolution in very beginning ways, and a sense from some people of, like, literally where people have come up to us and said, well, we don't trust what these authorities are saying and what the government is saying, but we trust what you guys are saying because we know that you're out here for the people. So there's a, you know, that's something important, and it's something, but it's something that is maybe a seed of something that kind of we're working to develop on a whole other level, not just that, you know, that we as the people who are out here representing for the revolution are trusted, but that actually people themselves can start to get a different understanding of things and can see the revolution that's needed to change all of this. People themselves can start to, you know, take that up and lead others with it. So that's some of what we're working on and some of what we're encountering.
So what do people think that we do need to do? I mean, I think it's really important what you're saying in the encounters you're having with people, in the exchange you're having with people. And in particular, because there's a, you know, I know just hearing some things myself, just want, you know, going around and talking with people in my neighborhood, whatever, you know, it's like there's an element of like people hating it. And then at the same time, well, what the hell do we do about it? You know, and it's kind of, and what are you telling me to do about it? You know, and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, this is actually really good, the kind of exchange that you're having, digging into it. But can we dig into that a little bit more, like in terms of like, well, what do people, when you tell people about what's the cause, what's the solution, what's going on here? You know, how do people react? And it's a big question for people. It's a big issue for people because you're looking at what you have now, and then this, what's coming out, and that monster that's coming up out of the, you know, background, and slowly starting to stomp all over everything. And I won't take this any further because it'll just get ridiculous. But the thing of looking at what is going on and seeing it and saying, okay, and coming to a point where, okay, I can't live like this. I can't live and allow and not do anything around this. What is happening with people in relation to that? Does it, in terms of actually finding the ways to step up and the need to step up and out around this?
Well, one thing that's important, I think, is, you know, because we've been out with an orientation of we're acting in the interest of humanity and in the interest of, you know, people everywhere being able to understand reality and themselves being able to act in the interest of the people. That's been a certain pull that people have gravitated to. And it's interesting that, like, people, on the one hand, there is a pretty wide sentiment and good sentiment of people wanting to, kind of rejecting the, you know, a lot of the self stuff that gets, you know, that gets promoted and it gets exacerbated. And it's frankly just part of, like, what it means to live under this system, right? Like, you know, you have people, we've, like, gone out to people in grocery store lines and, like, you know, people are going in to get the things they need. But then there's been also, you know, all this people buying up stuff. But then you have to, you know, people have to do that because everybody's in this system where everything is, you know, privately owned and, you know, everything is commodities. People have to get their things for their family in order to, you know, to be able to do this. But then it causes shortages, all these kinds of things. So people, on the one hand, people are driven in a lot of ways into competition, but on the other hand, like, there's a striving to, like, to want to figure out how do I not just act for myself in this, how do we help each other? And including people having some sense from their own experience or from, you know, some of what their, you know, their relatives or other people are going through. Like, you know, if you've got people in prison, you already know that what's going on in the prisons is that people are dehumanized and degraded and treated like their lives don't count, you know, and are packed in together in terrible conditions in many cases, you know. So then what happens when, you know, this disease goes through the prisons, what's going to happen to people? You know, there's, like, you know, or the thing that the person you had on before was talking about in the detention centers among immigrants, you know, and then even, like, you know, the fear of, like, what if people, you know, go for help, you know, and then what is that going to, how is that going to affect them? So all these different things are going on. But my point in this is, like, is there's, there's ways. One is we're talking to people about even the understanding the science of the virus is very important in terms of it's actually right to do social distancing. You know, that's not just a conspiracy or something. It's actually like it's important because you can slow the spread of the disease and that can actually help protect other people, even if most mm-hmm. people are not going to get that sick. And that's one thing that people can mm-hmm. do, not for themselves, but for others. But then also to be paying attention and to be feeding in, like we're asking people to like we have our website, revcom.us. We have our social media at TuneIntoRevcom. And the Revolution Club in Los Angeles has a phone number. And we're asking people to contact us and to tell us and feed in about what is happening to people. If there's repression coming down, you know, if people's needs are not being met. You know, if there's different things that are happening in different corners of society, like these things should be things that we're learning about and that and where people, when necessary, are mobilizing in relation to, you know, and demanding the needs be met and not allowing, you know, the kind of repression that that can come down. So these are things we're saying already. Look, these are the things that we need to be talking to each other about and learning what's happening, and that we need to be prepared to, you know, to defend people and to stand up for people. And, you know, and the other thing is that the communiques that we're issuing, we've issued two so far. We just issued the second one yesterday. These are something we're going to continue to issue. We have a live stream on our Facebook page that's going to go up today. We have a new YouTube channel that we're launching. You know, we're doing a lot more to be able to reach people on social media and on the internet. But there's a great importance to for people who can start to see this is totally unnecessary how this is being dealt with, and that we could deal with this in a whole better way with a different society. And really, with you know, especially becoming clearer, like there's a force out here getting organized for a real revolution. People themselves can be spreading those communiques, can be sending them out on social media, sending them online. We've been posting them up in different neighborhoods, which is something people can do. We're doing that very carefully. We're doing it with gloves. We're doing it with masks. You know, we're taking care of our own health, but even maybe more importantly, doing that as part of taking care of the health of others. But these are all things that people can do that actually matter right now, because people need to understand reality and they need to be able to be mobilized in the interest of humanity and not, you know, just either like broken down by what this system is doing to people or pit against each other.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you one question.
Just follow up.
Just 1 second. I just want to make sure that we don't leave here without getting ways for people to get hold of you guys. All right. So go ahead, Lenny, and then we'll come back.
Okay, just very briefly, I think I just want to underscore a lot of what Lucha was saying, the importance for people to be involved, the importance for people to be part of this, to be part of the spreading of the actual information. And I want to just add one thing is that part of doing this and part of what this tour is doing is, which is really part and parcel of the new communism brought forward by Bob Avakian, is the putting of the problems before the masses of people to grapple. Problems that the revolution is facing, problems of that humanity is facing, putting these problems before people to grapple with and be part of solving and contribute to solving is a very, very important thing. And I just wanted to underscore that one point, because I think, this is vitally important work, and it includes this dimension of it very, very critically. But I agree with you. We need to get the information out on the how to get in touch and how to be part of this.
Although I am really happy that you said that, because that's exactly what I was going to ask. And I'm really glad, because I think it's actually too much. People don't pay attention to actually making sure that people know that this is what needs to be done and how they need to be part of it. And I think it's absolutely important today. So, Lucha, go ahead.
Part of the doing and part of the thinking.
Great. Lucha, let's hear from you, and then that'll wrap it up. You got like a minute and a half, okay?
Okay, so the website is revcom.us. The social media for that on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Twitter is at Tune Into RevCom, and on that Facebook is where the live stream is going to be. The phone number for the Revolution Club in Los Angeles is 323-245-6947. So those are probably the most important thing to leave with people for how to contact us.
Okay, and we will put up all...
I just want to underscore the plug that you can go to YouTube. Go to YouTube to the RevComs, T-H-E-R-E-V-C-O-M-S. And there you will find a promo video for a new YouTube channel to watch for a new show. And this is going to be the RNL show. And RNL stands for Revolution, Nothing Less. And this is going to start streaming on Wednesday evening, March 25th. So mark your calendar and go to YouTube tonight for the promo video for this new show, okay?
Very cool. Looking forward to it, man. All right?
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you both very much for joining us today, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. All right? You got it.
All right. Thank you,
okay. Take care now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Lenny Wolf and Lucha Bright, and we're running out of time, so I'm just going to leave it at that and also thank our previous guest, Eunice Cho. And if you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. You can also just jump, look for my name, and you'll find it, and you'll find a way to get hold of me so we can actually get this thing going in a big way, all right? All right, take care now.
What good is love? Like a